Hello, and welcome to ASD Radio, the official podcast of the Alamosa School District. I'm one of your hosts, Superintendent Dr. Diana Jones, and I'm thrilled to be your guide to the people, programs, and progress shaping our schools. As always, we're joined by co-host, Assistant Superintendent, Dr. Luis Murillo. Dr. Murillo, ASD Radio is one of our favorite things we're honored to do.
And it is a favorite day of the week. We always say this. We have a very special guest today.
Yes, I'm excited.
I am excited. She is a wonderful educator and will be opening up a window and let us in her classroom via a podcast.
Yes. I hope people can visualize all the things that we're talking about today.
I'm sure they will be able to. The other thing that I want to bring up is we had a bond issue.
Yes, we did.
We are recording this on a Wednesday. The voting happened yesterday, November 4th, and our bond did not pass.
No, it did not.
It did not. We still want to thank everyone, of course, who participated in yesterday's November 4th election and really took the time to learn about the bond 5A, Proposition 5A. While the bond measure was not approved by the voters, we're deeply grateful to all who engaged in the conversation, attended meetings, asked questions, and shared feedback throughout the process. And although the results are not what we hoped for, our commitment as a school district always remains the same: to provide a safe, functional, and healthy learning environment for all of our students. The identified facility needs still exist. Those are not going to go away. We will take the time to review the results. As always, listen to our community and determine the best next steps moving forward. We appreciate your continued support of our schools, our students, our teachers, our staff, and our mission to prepare every learner for success. Thank you again for everyone's participation and continued partnership.
Yes, thank you to everyone. We appreciate those of you, as Dr. Murillo said, who made an informed vote, who asked questions, and always those who are there to support our students and our staff. It has been a journey for us, but we will continue to move forward and make sure that we are doing what's right for our students and staff. So it has been a busy week, though. We had 460 people come through the haunted house.
We did. We held, as a member of our community, our family engagement team put together a trunk or treat event as well as a haunted house, which was pretty scary. And we were very happy that 460 people came through and experienced the haunted house. And I saw a bunch of kids dressed up, getting a lot of candy, lots of smiles. And we also took the chance to get some feedback from community. We had a QR code with a brief survey, as well as there was some food that was given out. It was just a great event for our community all around.
Yes, it was. And it's just another way that we're trying to engage our community, but also get input from them and information, and then just make sure that everyone feels welcome and they have a good time when they enter our facilities. So thank you for all of those people who came out to enjoy the evening. And I'm sorry if you got too scared.
I did okay.
We received a video or a sound recording of some people screaming, and I thought maybe that was Dr. Murillo, but he said it wasn't.
I promise it wasn't me.
So let's move on to our first section, happenings at our campuses. What can you share with us, Dr. Murillo, that's happening around Alamosa School District?
One of the many things that we're very proud about at Alamosa School District, besides academics and the growth that we've seen, is our sports. Extracurricular activities give our students a chance to compete, to be proud about their town, our mascot, our very unique mascot,
yes,
and really representing our student body. And there's been a lot going on regarding fall sports. So the first thing that I want to talk about is our cross-country team. They made it to the state meet, and we had, which happened at the Norris Penrose Arena in Colorado Springs. I hear is a tough course there.
It is. I've been there. Yes, lots of hills.
That's what I hear.
Mm-hmm. We had, right up on the mountain.
We had a student, Ethan Merrick, who took second in Class 3A. As a team, our boys' team finished fourth, and our girls' team finished sixth. So overall, a great performance.
Absolutely.
I know Coach McQuitty, as always, would have wanted more, but still a great showing from our student athletes at the state meet in Colorado Springs.
Yes, congratulations to Ethan and all of the participants. Great job.
We also have volleyball. Volleyball is hosting the regional tournament this Friday at Alamosa High School. And this year, they are seeded number one in the tournament.
Yay!
So we're expecting great things from the team, a lot of great competition for, again, the student athletes. And we will see a lot of people come through our high school this Friday.
Yes, we encourage everyone to come out and root our Lady Moose on.
And lastly, our football team dropped a tough game last week against Pagosa Springs. That was a very close one. I listened to it on the radio. Still made it to the playoffs. They will be traveling to Wellington in the first round of the playoffs. And, you know, as we say in football, anything can happen any given day. It's Friday Night Lights.
We believe.
So they have a tough matchup ahead. But again, you know, anything can happen. And we'll be rooting hard for our Mean Moose.
Well, Friday's going to be a busy day also for our staff members. It is a actual work day and a professional development day for our teachers. We will have training around the instructional elements within our instructional model, how to utilize the instructional model to plan an appropriate lesson or unit, and then how to develop quality assessments tied to our proficiency scales, which our listeners will get to hear a little bit more about shortly. And we're very proud of the day, and there's going to be a lot of learning, a lot of sports, lots of activities happening on Friday, and we're proud of all of that. So best of luck to our student athletes and coaches, and we're looking forward to a great learning opportunity with our staff. But let's move on to celebrate.
Well, again, our favorite section. For every day of the week, I have the pleasure of introducing a 10-year vet in the field of education, and we are lucky and proud that those 10 years in education have happened at Alamosa School District, specifically at Alamosa Elementary School 3-5, all in the third grade. And when we talk about teachers, you look for certain things, certain qualities, and I have the pleasure of introducing one of our best to ASD Radio, Megan Mortensen.
Hello, thank you guys for having me.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. Welcome to the podcast, ASD Radio, I should say. Will you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
All right. So Dr. Murillo kind of captured my career here at Alamosa School District. I've been here for 10 years. I'm now on year 10 of teaching third grade. I got to student teach in kindergarten here, so I got a little dose of some K-2 vibes and being with the younger students, but my heart landed in third grade, and you know, it's captured it, and that's kind of where I'm at for now. Within the district, I've coached volleyball. I've done a lot of things to advance my education here, and worked closely with both of you two, Dr. Murillo and Dr. Jones, in pursuing educational leadership. And you guys have been great mentors to becoming a principal someday. So in those 10 years, I have learned a ton about education. And honestly, I'm just so excited to continue to learn more. And I think that's why I'm a teacher, because I just like to learn a lot. And it never stops.
We talk a lot about leading in the position that where you're at the time, and you have certainly done so, and that's why you're here today. You're leading, you're the trailblazer for our school district.
Yeah. Megan, in education, as you know, we have teachers who lead the work of adopting district initiatives. Mm-hmm. I would not only call you an early adopter, but I would also say that your classroom is a model classroom. And we're here specifically to talk about HRS, or the High Reliability Schools Model, which is a leadership model meant to do several things, but one of them is to be really clear about what it is the students are learning, not necessarily about what we're teaching, but what students are learning and how we communicate with students, parents, colleagues on the progress of student learning. What has been your experience in the learning of HRS and the implementation in the classroom?
Well, I'd kind of want to back up on that, and it kind of ties into my experience in the 10 years. So HR, high reliability schools, is a newer term for me. However, it seems instrumental in where we're headed. And so I absorb all the things that I can to learn about that. But when we're thinking about where I started, obviously I know when you're teaching, you have the model from CDE, you have your standards, and that's kind of what I did my first couple years, and that was pretty much my guide. Teach the standards, and you're going to be just fine. And I tried to do that, and it was, you know, your first year, you're balancing a lot, behaviors, management, just trying to get your feet under yourself, and just learning the students and the curriculum and all that. But the first few years were a little rocky, but towards the end of this in my 10 years, more specifically within the 4 or 5 years, we've kind of transitioned to, okay, this is what we're going to use. And it has all, you know, started about 4 or 5 years ago, and it has been a process, and there's been little glimmers of light in between and little moments where we can celebrate, but it's a transition that takes a lot of time, especially when you're used to seeing things done in old ways. It's just a kind of a new mindset for teachers and for students and their families. So when it comes to their learning and kind of where I've come from, I mean, from the beginning till now, it's kind of been there. It's just not been concrete and clear. But now with the HRS model and all the things we're learning in the PDs and from you guys and our admin and that kind of model, like, we have a clear roadmap and are laying that strong foundation to what we need to teach and what students need to learn. So,
well, taking that just a step further, you've been through that process, and you and your students actually presented to our Board of Education this week. Mm-hmm. Can you share with our listeners the messages that your students shared?
Yeah. So really our students, really wanted to share the work they were doing in their classroom. So I had a couple students join me for a board meeting, and they just wanted to share with the board and the community that was there and their families, what are we even doing with report cards? What are we doing with their student data? I mean, they're getting these student portfolios sent home. What do these scores mean? And so obviously that learning and teaching and doing is happening in the classroom. But the most exciting part, I think, right now in the phase we're in is my teaching is becoming their doing. And they are the ones explaining report cards to people. They're the ones explaining their data folders. They are able to explain what a proficiency skill and what it means to a standard for ELA or math. And it is really cool to see that vocabulary and their language transform in their learning, because they know what they might need to work on and where we're headed in each quarter. And obviously we have quarters to kind of set some goals, but really ideally you want them, they know that we have till the end of third grade to do this, and I have my teacher's support and my family can understand what I'm doing a lot better. And my teacher knows exactly where I'm at, and I know where I'm at as a student. So they just really wanted to showcase all those things, proficiency skill, the ratings, what they mean, data folders, report cards, all those good things. But it was really good to hear their voice, because, you know, I can try to preach it and teach it. But at the end of the day, if the kids can explain what they're doing, they're learning it.
They did a wonderful job articulating where they were.
Thank you. They were excited.
You've done a lot of explaining about students and families. My question is about you. What have you learned yourself as a teacher, and how has engaging in this work for the past four years made you a better teacher?
So honestly, I have two perspectives on this, two lenses. I go from, well, I'm a parent. My kids are in this district. I have a high school daughter, and she didn't get to go through the standards-based report card. But when my son was in my third grade class, I kind of had that unique perspective, like, what do I want to see as a parent? And what do I want the other parents alongside my son to understand? What are we doing? What do these report cards mean? And how to transfer that from our classroom to home. And so that was a big change 2 years ago when we changed that report card to meeting expectations, to did not meet and exceeds and things like that. But so that's one perspective I get. But then for me as a teacher, I can really look at the standards now and see exactly where all, for example, 22 kids in my class, where they're at in every standard for ELA and math. And we're able to track that data and they're able to do that too. So once I'm able to figure out where they're at, then we relay that to parents. And I think that's good to keep that transparency. So I kind of have two perspectives. What did I want to see as a parent and what did I want to send home to see? Obviously I knew what I was doing in the classroom, but what did parents want to see? And it really helped me guide my instruction. And where I needed to go and how to help kids get where they need to be.
Well, research tells us that it's extremely important for students to be able to articulate what it is they should know and be able to do in reference to a standard. How do you see proficiency scales helping with that?
So the scale is very visual for our students. They can get a score of a 1 through 4. One meaning they did not meet the standard and they still need continued support from the teacher. 2 is approaching, meaning some parts of the standard are still confusing and they still need support from a teacher. Meeting expectations, meaning, you know, students mastered that standard at grade level, and they know exactly what they're doing without a ton of support and mistakes. And then 4 is a really challenging one to get to, but you know, we have those learners who can exceed beyond the standard. And so they go beyond grade level. And with that in the classroom, it helps to see the scale model up on our wall. So kids know, like, if they get that score on their paper, what does that score indicate and what does it mean? And so we also have it color coordinated now too, because third graders are visual. Same thing, red is did not meet, yellow is approaching, green is meeting, and exceeds is a 4. So it really helps them see exactly where they're at, and they can see the learning goal, the learning target, and it's in kid-friendly language. And if it's confusing, they know exactly why. So the score is very helpful, the scale.
Thank you for that. What would you say to a parent? So, you know, I grew up on an A, B, C, D. Mm-hmm. No Fs in my report card. But on that type of grading system, what would you say to a parent who thinks, you know, why are we doing 4, 3, 2, 1? I mean, in my head, an A is a 4, a 3 is a B, and so on. What is the difference between that? And how would you explain to a parent like me who went through a school system that was used to the letter grades?
And that's the transition we're trying to kind of shift in parents' minds. Really, though, we explain that each grade has academic standards that they need to meet at each grade level, all throughout their educational career. And I think really just communicating with parents, it's just like, don't you want to know exactly what your kids might be doing well in? And if they have gaps, we can tell you. So like if they got an F, on a report card, I tell parents, or not an F, let's just say a C. We're not going to go all the way to F. I don't know what a C means. Yeah. And so I have that conversation. I've had to have that conversation with parents in the past couple of years. Like, what does a C mean? We don't know. Are they just not completing the assignment? Is it missing? Like, there could be many other outliers to that or factors that indicate why they have a C. But when you're getting these concrete scores, it's just a shift that they can tell exactly where their student is. So it's just some little bit of training, a little bit of talking to. I mean, I've only experienced my third grade level and the experience I've had with teachers. And we've had a couple conversations like that, similar to, okay, my student's used to being an A student. Why are they not meeting or exceeding? And they get those approaching or did not meet. And I'm like, okay, well, let's look at the standard. Let's look at their score. Let's look at their rubric. And this is why. So they have questioned it. But it's nice to fall back on the scores and the standard and the rubrics to lay that out. But it is, it's a transfer. I mean, it's just a change in mindset a little bit. Usually they're pretty welcoming to the idea.
If we think about it, the standard is at the level three. Mm-hmm. So we want everyone to be at a three. We often talk about how are we meeting the needs of our gifted students, and that's the level four. But the beauty of this is that every student, whether they're classified as gifted or not, has the opportunity to reach that four on certain aspects when they after they've mastered that standard. And then there are conversion scales, many of them, but a three, if you wanted to take that to an A three is an A. Mm-hmm. And then if you needed to say the four is an A+, I guess. Right. So, right. But our goal is always to master the standard at the three. And so let's think about that. You shared with your parents after the report cards went out and had them review the report cards, where their students were, have dialogue with their students, and then students were able to then talk to their parents about their learning progression based upon that standard and proficiency scale. What was the response from your parents? What did you get back in return?
So I wanted to make sure, you know, before all these report cards went out, I knew in their, we call them either student data or not data folders, portfolios that go home with the report card, that inside those report cards are their evidence pieces that support those standards. When I put those report cards together and sent all of their CFAs home and their grades home or their scores home, what I tried to do before that is I sent home a family letter. And so I did that in both English and Spanish. And so let's take quarter one, for example. I mapped out all the ELA standards that are assessed in quarter one and made it friendly for parents. I mapped out what the scale meant in student and family friendly language. Same thing for math. I mapped out exactly what was going to be in this folder and on that report card. So there was no gray area. It was pretty black and white about what standards got sent home. And so sending home that family letter, I think, answered questions. I mean, the report card itself explains what the standards mean and what the MOOS acronym means. It does a very good job of doing that. But having that family letter sent home in English and Spanish of the quarter one report cards this year, I think made it very helpful to not get too many questions back because it was very clear, like, this is what we've been doing. Your kids know what we've been doing. So that letter, and then we also sent home a reflection and goal sheet. And so I expressed to parents, like, this is kind of mandatory. I was pretty blunt with them. Like, please sit down with your child and review the evidence pieces and their report card side by side and try to understand where your student is at and why. And not only did the parents need to understand that, the student was kind of challenged to explain why did you get those scores on your report card based on your effort and your learning on that standard. And so I think having those pieces inside the evidence folder or the portfolio with the report card was super helpful, and having that, giving parents and the child an opportunity to reflect and bring that back to school, It was really good. And I didn't get any questions in quarter one, but questions always come up. So I think they were just happy, parents and students, knowing exactly where they finished in quarter one. So if you front load people and give them lots of information, it's usually pretty good. So that's what we tried to do as a team.
Okay.
Yep.
Schools, there's a lot happening in schools, and we've been talking a lot about students learning, their learning progression, and how we're able to know through the data folders. There's this whole other piece about behaviors and how we as educators play an important role in teaching students behaviors. How is that being measured, and how is it being communicated with students and parents?
So at the 3-5, we have a MOOSE acronym. MOOSE stands for, M stands for move safely, O, offer help to others, the other O, organize, S, show respect, and E, engage, ready to learn. And so the students know this in and out. Like it, the MOOSE acronym, MOOSE behaviors, expectations are all over in our school. Restrooms, hallways, stairs, cafeteria, assembly behaviors. Like this is our model for how we act and behave in the school. And so on the report card, that is new this year. But we wanted to show parents how students are behaving in school. And so, it also ties into their learning. And so I think one of my students mentioned that last night at the board meeting, like these learning behaviors affect, what we can do academically. And so the scale is the same. One, did not meet move safely. Two, approaching for move safely, and so on. So each letter is graded on that same scale, and they're given that score for each letter.
So if I'm a parent, I don't have to do as much guessing on a letter grade, because I would then know exactly where my kid is academically, but I would also get some feedback on how my student is developing behaviorally. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. It's just really nice to see. And I told students and parents, I'm going to be honest, because I think throughout this whole process, whether it's academics or behaviors or the portfolios or report cards being sent home, it's all about transparency and just consistency and communication. So like, honestly, I don't think they were too startled if there were behaviors on that report card they might not have been happy with, because we're in constant communication with parents with phone calls home and in Class Dojo, which is a way to communicate too. So there shouldn't be any major surprises because, I mean, we're doing this whole thing from day one. So
well, Megan, a teacher's day, as we reflect on it, is quite busy. Mm-hmm. And we have built intentionally time in each day for our teachers to collaborate, to build proficiency skills, work on common assessments, review the data during what we call PPCT time, which is professional planning and collaboration time. Can you explain to the listeners what PPCT time is and how it's utilized within your third grade team?
Sure. So every Monday and Tuesday, we have it mapped out within our PPCT time to collaborate with our third grade team. So Monday and Tuesday is where we simply just focus on all of the things that we've been talking about: report cards, proficiency skills, making sure we have alignment in our CFAs, common formative assessments. And that time on Monday and Tuesday is spent solely on that. We engage as a team, only focusing on that. We're not talking about anything else, behaviors of our students, other challenges we might have, all the things we need to do. The norms have been set within our grade level. Our administration, Michelle Wilson and Rick Salazar, do a fantastic job of coming in and making sure that we're following those norms and staying focused and engaged, because, you know, it is tricky at the end of the long school day, like, to focus on something that requires a lot of attention. And so we have that support from our admin. Our third grade team just has those norms, and we know that we have to get things done in order for us to keep moving forward. So that time on Monday and Tuesday is very valuable into how we take these baby steps forward in each quarter, with each scale, with each standard. And it's focused only on those days. So other days we have things planned, but Monday and Tuesdays are set for grade levels to meet and focus on these things.
What is exciting about your job as an educator in Alamosa School District?
To be quite honest, when you wake up, you just don't even know what's going to happen that day. You never know what kind of surprises you're going to get.
Yeah.
Every single day in a classroom is different. I mean, yes, you're still doing a lot of the same learning and standards throughout the quarter or the day or the week or whatever it is, but there are just things that pop up and you just don't know what's coming. So it keeps you on your toes. It makes each day exciting to know that you're not going to go in and it's the same every day. And so obviously that, but then honestly being around students, I think that's why we come to school. Every day we wake up and my mentality is, how am I going to help my kids today? Like, I need to get to school for them. And so those two things, each day is different. And I think a lot of teachers go to school for kids. So
absolutely,
those two things are exciting.
We are so grateful that you and your students are willing to share the work that's happening in your classroom, and not only affects what's happening in your classroom, but it's affecting our whole district. How does that make you feel as an educator to hear your own students speaking about their learning? And as I said earlier, articulating that so well.
Well, first and foremost, just super proud. It's just so exciting to see this language that we've been talking about for 5 years or so, come out of their mouths, and it makes sense to them. And it's relatable, and they're excited about it. Those two students and the students, when you come into my classroom, are so excited about it. But with that said, like, this is not a one man job. This has taken the whole third grade team. This has taken our administration. This has taken, I mean, all the support from you guys and the trainings we've received and all the experts that have come in to explain this to us and transfer it from their ideas to our ideas and making it work for our classroom. Like, it has blossomed, and I hope everyone knows, like, this is not just me. This is a classroom of students. This is parents. This is our teams within our each school or school building, each grade level. This is administrators. This is superintendents doing the work. These are trainers coming in. This is everyone. So I hope everyone knows, yeah, these were my students out there, but I am not doing this alone. This is not just my doing. I have a ton of support and a ton of knowledge coming in from everywhere. I mean, within our third grade team, we have a lot of years of experience and knowledge. So it's just exciting to see it come together to the point we're at now, and to the point where we were at last night, where students got to speak about it. But I hope everyone knows, like, this is there's a lot of hands in on this, and it's exciting that students are engaging in it and parents are understanding it more too. So
collective ownership,
right? Exactly, takes everyone.
Yes.
All right, I have $1 million question. If you had a magic wand that could change and could change something about the educational system, what would that be?
Oh, man. I should have knew a question like that was coming. Oh, man. Change in education. Ugh. Well, if I'm thinking something like not budget or money-wise, like, honestly, when I talk to my kids in the classroom, I can say I could use more time in a day. And that's just to teach them. Like, I wish you guys could stay here and keep learning and keep going, because we have so much to do. And so, I mean, we're only given so many hours to work with them every day. And, you know, we all have families at home too and things we need to go to. But sometimes I really do think, like, man, if we had some more time, like, we could really master these standards. And if it wasn't always a race against the clock with time, I mean, we have to prepare these kids for beginning of the year testing, middle of the year with all kinds of tests, Dibbles, NWA, and honestly in third grade, the biggest time battle we try to get ready for is CMAS in April. Right. And so I think that would be my time. Like, it just flies, and wish we could have more of it. And it flies by, and it's just like, I just wish we had more time to keep going.
We appreciate you investing so much of yourself and your time and our students, and it is certainly making a difference.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
As always, it's a great day to be a Mean Moose. Thank you for being with us today. Education Radio is a podcast by the Alamosa School District. Podcasts are available in both English and Spanish and are a click away on our school website. Parents, remember that educating your child is the key to their future and a life of options. Until next time.
Alamosa School District. Students today, leaders tomorrow.